Now, it may seem odd to create music out of color, but some people really do see blue or yellow when they hear music, or see a color when they think of a certain number or letter. Others actually feel the flavor of food on their fingers. They have what's called synesthesia, a neurological condition which causes one sense to cross paths with another. It used to be considered an extremely rare condition. Today, scientists believe synesthesia affects an estimated 4% of the population. David Eagleman is a neurologist at the cutting edge of synesthesia research, and he's the co-author of the book Wednesday is Indigo Blue, Discovering the Brain of Synesthesia. And Strange Champs asked him to describe the condition.
Synesthesia can take a lot of different forms. Could you start maybe by giving us a sense of the range of experiences that people have?
Yeah, so there are something like 150 different recorded forms of synesthesia. It can be a mixture of the senses in any way that you can imagine. So, for example, some people will hear music and it causes them to see colors. And other people will hear a name and it will put a taste in their mouth. Other people, they'll taste something and it will make them feel like there's something being felt on their fingertips.
So for some people, you know, the color 3 is blue and the color 4 is purple?
That's right. It's probably the most common form of synesthesia. Things like numbers and letters will trigger color experiences. So Wednesday will be indigo blue and February will be yellow and so on. And for each synesthete, of course, it's different. They have a unique palette of associations that they make.
And so that's one of the more common forms, letters or numbers that have colors, but there are others. Your co-author discovered one case of synesthesia at a dinner party?
That's right. The chef at the dinner party, the host of the dinner party who was cooking the food, he said, oh, the chicken is not quite ready. It's not pointy enough. And so Richard Cytowick, my co-author, said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you know, when I taste things, there's a certain feeling on my fingertips that I get. And I know when the chicken is ready because of the way it feels on my fingertips when I taste some of it. And that's what's happening in synesthesia, is that different areas of the brain are talking with one another in ways that they don't in a normal brain.
Hmm. What's the most unusual case of synesthesia you've ever run across?
One subject that I've studied in detail is a musician, and she has extraordinarily rich synesthesia where for every pitch, for every chord, for every instrument timbre, she experiences shapes and colors and textures. And she also feels as though her body is leaping or moving or sliding or falling when there are different key changes, for example.
It sounds like going through life on acid.
Well, the interesting part is that synesthetes accept the reality that's presented to them exactly the way that we all do. There's nothing interesting or unusual to them about it. For example, imagine if a colorblind person said to you, my gosh, everywhere you look, you see colors. That must be like being on acid. You would say, oh, well, actually, no, that's just what I take to be reality out there.
Do scientists understand what causes synesthesia? I mean, is there a gene that triggers mixed perceptions?
Well, I'm happy to say we've been making tremendous progress just in the last few years. It turns out synesthesia is heritable. And if you are in a family with synesthetes, if your parents are synesthetes, then you've got a pretty good chance of being synesthetic yourself. So what we've been doing is collecting up large families with synesthesia. And essentially what you do is you look at how the synesthesia marches through the family tree and look at what genetic changes have that same pattern. And so we're almost there now. We're probably just a few months away from pulling the first gene for synesthesia.
Well, speaking of synesthesia running in families, I noticed the afterword to your book is written by Dmitry Nabokov. That's the son of the famous Russian writer Vladimir Nabokov, right?
That's right. So it turns out that Vladimir Nabokov had synesthesia and wrote about it. You know, he had grown up reading Cyrillic, and then when he moved to the United States, he was reading our alphabet, and his colors transferred. And so he had synesthesia in both alphabets, and he really appreciated it and loved the colors that were involved. So it turns out Vladimir Nabokov's wife was also synesthetic, and their son, Dmitry, is also synesthetic.
But I'm just wondering what this would be like for a writer, somebody who's trying to create beauty out of words and who's lucky enough to have this particular neurological gift, we can call it, that gives them an added layer of sense perception that they can play with. So I'm wondering if Nabokov, you know, used his synesthesia in his writing, if it affected his writing.
Well, it's a very interesting question. The funny part about it is the colors that a synesthete will associate with different letters are idiosyncratic. They're just meaningful for him. And as a result, any sort of beauty that he injects into the language that way wouldn't be transmissible to other people. Nonetheless, one can always enjoy inside jokes. And so Nabokov, it turned out, was a lepidopterist. He loved butterflies. And so one of his favorite butterflies happened to have yellow wings and a black body. So if you look at it, it's yellow, black, yellow. Well, it just so happens that for him, the letter A was yellow and D was black. So he loved the name Ada, A-D-A, because that was yellow, black, yellow in the same way as his favorite butterfly. So one of his novels, he entitled Ada.
Right.
So that's an example of him using his synesthesia in his language. But again, it's just an inside joke. No one else would really get it.
Just a personal joke. Wow. That's right. That's just fascinating. Now, Nabokov is just one of, there have been many famous artists, writers, and musicians who've been synesthetes. We should talk about some of the others. Didn't the Russian painter Kandinsky have, well, an especially acute case of synesthesia?
That's right. Kandinsky, when he would hear music, would see shapes and colors and textures. So he would blast his phonograph and stand in front of his canvas and essentially paint what he was seeing. So if you can imagine a Kandinsky, that was for him music. And again, it only made sense to him exactly what that music sounded like and how it looked. But nonetheless, for the rest of us, that makes a beautiful painting. It makes a very unusual sort of sights and shapes and textures all put together. That was his internal experience.
Doesn't that make you think that you should really only look at Kandinsky's paintings if you have the music there as well? Has anybody ever exhibited them that way?
Well, that is a great idea. I don't know if anyone has exhibited it that way, but they should, certainly. This is an interesting point, though, because we have several idioms in our language that almost certainly were given to us by synesthetes. So when you talk about somebody having a loud shirt or a sweet personality or smooth jazz or sharp cheese, things like this, those were almost certainly expressions that were introduced by synesthetes, and yet they stick in the language because they sort of make sense. We sort of get it, even though we might not be synesthetic ourselves.
Well, do you wonder whether there's a kind of low-level synesthesia that perhaps we all have, or perhaps a great many people have?
Well, it does appear that there are certain connections across the senses that everybody seems to share, although at an unconscious level for most of us. So, for example, if I were to take a piano keyboard and hit the high note, ding, 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 and then I hit the low note, ding, 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 and I ask you, which one of those is brighter, what would you say?
The top one.
Okay, and if I were to say which one is bigger, what would you say?
The bottom one.
Well, that's what everybody would say. And that's really weird because all I'm doing is playing a note and you're answering questions about luminance and size. So what this suggests is that in everybody's brain, there are these connections across the senses where it just seems sort of natural to us that a high note would kind of be small and bright and a low note would be big and darker. And what that must represent is that there's cross-wiring between our hearing and our sight in all brains.
Well, we should end by talking about one piece of art created by a synesthete that we can actually listen to. So Olivier Messiaen was one of several famous composers who had colored hearing. How did he describe it?
When Messiaen would compose, he would talk about, for example, a blue-orange cascade of chords. To him, that made sense that when the music was moving in a particular direction, there was real color to it. So he really worked to have that beauty that he saw as part of the music. And when he described it in his diary and so on, he would describe the colors as well as the music.
For example, there's a piece you refer to, a 1977 symphony he wrote, Au Canyon des Étoiles, From the Canyons to the Stars, which was inspired by the red rocks of Bryce Canyon. Anybody who's ever seen Bryce or pictures of Bryce knows the rocks are this gorgeous red-orange color. Is that mostly what you hear in this piece, or are there other colors as well?
To Messiaen, when he wrote this music, it recaptured that color for him, that experience for him. It's not necessarily the case that any of us would have that physical color experience the way he did, but we can appreciate it adds something to us to listen to it and know that when he heard this music, he experienced those red colors.
Music from Messiaen's From the Canyons to the Stars, inspired by the red rocks of Bryce Canyon. And Strange Champs talked with David Eagleman, who directs the Laboratory for Perception and Action at Baylor's College of Medicine. Eagleman's the co-author with Richard Cytoic of the book Wednesday is Indigo Blue.